Yeah, I'm not sure. All right, good morning, everyone. We're going to be in 1 Samuel chapter 25, pretty much exclusively today, as we talk about Abigail in our study about major lessons from minor characters, people that we might not always consider in our thoughts about Bible characters, but who really are amazing and do incredibly faith-building things. So we want to talk about that this morning, and before we do, let's go ahead and get started with it. Father in heaven, we praise your name. We thank you so much for loving fools, for sending Jesus to die for fools. We pray, God, that we will not be foolish, that we will not be like Nabal, that we will be, we will have open eyes to the evidence that you put in front of us, that we will walk by faith and have solid, strong spiritual discernment, the way Abigail did. Help us to be like her, help us to learn valuable lessons that change our lives for the better this morning. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Okay, so I'm going to tell the story, and then we will get into the questions. Just to set the context, David is on the run for his life because King Saul is trying to kill him. You remember, David slung that stone to bring Goliath down. And then those ladies were kind of singing about how David is better than Saul, and that really made Saul mad. And so he's chasing David because David is a threat to the kingdom in his mind. Now, David's not a threat to the kingdom in the sense that David's going to try to, you know, kill Saul and take the kingdom from him. No, but he is a threat in the sense that Samuel told Saul, God's going to rip the kingdom out of your hand. He's going to give it to someone better than you. And then Samuel went and anointed David as king. So, yes, absolutely, David is a threat in that sense, and Saul is trying to kill him. So David is forced to flee to the wilderness. And it's not just David that goes to the wilderness, but a bunch of other people who were embittered and unhappy with Saul. They all go out there to the wilderness to be with David. And so David actually has an army of 600 men at his side. And while he's in the wilderness of Paran, which is just south of Judah, he and his men find a bunch of shepherds with their sheep out there. And David, he acts like a chief shepherd, and he protects all these shepherds, and he protects all of these sheep, from harm against Philistine marauders. And come to find out, these sheep and the shepherds actually belong to this very rich man named Nabal. Now, Nabal, he should have been very grateful to David because David, you know, protected his sheep, which was very profitable for Nabal's business. But when David asks Nabal for some help, you know, some food, some supplies for his men, Nabal insults David. He says, "Who is this son of Jesse?" Which there's so many cool connections in 1 Samuel because that's the same language that Saul uses in a derogatory way about David earlier, in an earlier chapter. But he says, "Who is the son of Jesse? You know, he could be a disobedient runaway slave for all I know. And so I'm not gonna help him. I'm not gonna give him any of my bread, any of my meat." Well, Nabal's name means fool. And I mean, you just think about it, that just is foolish, right? You have somebody who does this great deed for you. He helps you make a lot of money by protecting your assets. And then you just turn around and treat him like trash. That's just a foolish thing to do. And so David hears about this. He's furious. He tells his men, "All right, grab your swords, because I'm going to kill everybody in that household, even down to the smallest boy who urinates against a wall," which is an interesting phrase, but it's in there in Scripture. And he is on his way to go kill everybody in this household when Nabal's servant goes and speaks to Abigail, Nabal's wife, and he tells her, "Look, David's coming." Nabal just, you know, totally insulted him, totally reproached him, and Abigail acts immediately, and she goes and she meets David. While he's on the way, she meets him. She falls before him. She begs him to forgive her for her husband's foolishness. She pleads with him not to kill her husband and his household. She reminds him of God's promises. And she tells David, "Look, this is, if you go through with this, like, this is not going to be good for your reputation as a king." And so she actually convinces David not to go through with it. And David then thanks God for sending her. "Thank you for sending Abigail, for, you know, talking some sense into me and not allowing me to go through with this." And when Abigail goes back and tells her husband Nabal what she did, he like apparently has a stroke and goes into a comatose state for about 10 days, and that's when the Lord finally takes his life. And so he's brought down in judgment for his foolishness. David praises God for killing Nabal, for carrying out this justice. And then he takes Abigail to be one of his wives. All right, so with that background in mind, let's get into our questions. I'd like to try something a little different. When you give your answer, it would be good to just mention the verse number, just because this chapter is kind of long. It's 44 verses, so if you can just say like, oh, well, I really like what verse 32 says about Abigail. That will help us kind of stay rooted in the text. It will also help visitors who may not have been able to, you know, read the text ahead of time like we were able to. So here's the first question. What impresses you about Abigail? And what would it look like to practice these qualities, whichever quality you want to bring up? What would that look like to practice in our life? And just raise your hand and we'll get you a microphone. Yeah, Randy?
Around verse 18, of course, before that, you made the point, it's really good, that Nabal, he should have seen it as returning the favor, not as just giving something to the
God, because
David had done him great things. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to bring up was about Abigail. Mm-hmm. To me, she's the star of this passage.
Sure.
She had the ability to size up a situation and quickly and very good wording. But equally important, she acted rapidly on that plan. And even David said to her, I think I wrote it down here, if you had not come quickly to meet me, not one male would have been left alive.
Yes.
So it's just so good. Some of us, and even me, you know, maybe I come up with a good idea, but I don't act on it. Or I act without coming up with a good plan. She did both. She did it right, and it worked out really well.
Yeah.
And I got something. Next question.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Yeah, verse 2 describes her, I think it's verse 2. Oh, maybe it's verse 3 describes her as an intelligent woman, right? So she's smart. She comes up with good wording that's going to, you know, really help diffuse the tension and ease the situation. But then, like you said, yeah, she acts quickly. What I think is neat about that is in verse 17, when the servant of Nabal is speaking to her, he says this, verse 17, "Now therefore know and consider what you should do. For evil is plotted against our master and against all his household, and he's such a worthless man that no one could speak to him." But then verse 18, "Then Abigail hurried and took all this with her." So the servant says, I want you to take some time and really consider, you know, really think this over. And for her, like, well, I don't have to think long about this. Like, we're going to die. If I don't do something, our whole household, we're going to get slaughtered by King David. And so she takes action on that, and that's really good. A lot of times, like you said, we have good ideas, good plans, but we don't act on it. Or we wait, we'll say, well, I'll act on that later. Well, there's no later here. Like when she intercepts David, he's on his way to kill them all. So she had to do that quickly. Really good. Bobby?
I think in verse just 23 and 24, how she saw David, she took action, she took responsibility immediately. Didn't try to blame anybody else and said, look, we're wrong here, and was very humble and just saying, look, we're wrong here, which is not, you know, no one likes to be wrong. No one wants to always take responsibility and do the right thing. So that really stood out to me.
Yeah, really good. Because it's interesting, she's honest about her husband's character. Right? She calls him a fool. Right? She knows, like, you know, his name is Nabal. He's living up to his name. But she doesn't just blame it all on him. Right? She doesn't say, well, you know, he's a fool and just, this is all his fault. She says, forgive me. She actually takes the blame upon herself. And the way she words it at the end of verse 25 is, I didn't see the young men come and ask for help. It's almost like she's taking responsibility for that. Like, I should have seen them. I should have known David had come to help, to ask for help, but I didn't. And maybe there's some good application there that sometimes in marriage, the best way to end a conflict is to apologize and take the blame yourself, even if it wasn't fully your fault or even if it wasn't really your fault. Now, you don't want to do that all the time. That's not healthy, right? Then you're enabling your spouse to never take responsibility. But sometimes it can be helpful to just be the sacrificial lamb. She's actually acting like Jesus here because she's interceding And she's saying, David, I want you to take the sins of my husband and put them on me. I'm the one to blame here. Really, really amazing attitude. Will?
Two things I notice. One, she's able to cut through all the fluff and just find the truth almost instantly. Two, it must have come as a shock to her. Even if he is her husband, she must have felt like shocked at yet another foolish decision. And she did not let those emotions override her ability to do something about it.
Yeah, really good. And connected with that, she seeks Nabal's good, even though he does not deserve it. Like you said, Will, like she could have easily allowed her emotions with her husband to take over. I mean, think about it. He's called a mean, harsh, evil man. How do you think their marriage was? How do you think he spoke to Abigail, all right, his wife? I don't get the impression that he was just this kind gentleman with her, right? But with everybody else, well, he was a fool. No, she probably was very mistreated by him. And if you think about it, this is her chance to get rid of him. Finally, she could say, look, I'll just let David come in and kill him, and he'll finally get what he deserves for being foolish, and I'll just be free of him. In fact, their characters are so opposite, Abigail's and Nabal, many people just assume their marriage must have been arranged. Right? And imagine you get set up with a Nabal, and you're an Abigail. I mean, that's horrifying. But this is her chance to be free, and she doesn't do that. She may not respect her husband's character, but she still respects her husband's position enough to protect him from himself, essentially. And I think there's good application here that wives, be careful thinking that you only have to do good for your husbands if they do good for you. Now, that goes the other way too, right? Husbands as well. Spouses often fall into the trap of thinking that marriage is a contract where you do your part and I'll do mine. And if you break the contract and you're not doing your part, well, then I'm totally free from having to do mine. Marriage is not a contract. It's a covenant, which means I'm going to do my part even if you don't do yours. Which is really a kind of a powerful way of thinking about it. God talks about that in 2 Timothy 2:13 with his relationship with us. He says, even if you are unfaithful, I'm still going to be faithful to you. Doesn't mean we're going to be, you know, saved. He doesn't mean that he's going to take us to heaven even if we live however we want. But the point is, God's saying, I'm not going to, you can just totally abandon the covenant with me, but I'm not going to stop doing good to you. I'm not going to stop treating you well. I'm going to do my part, whether you do yours or not. And Abigail, wow, what a great example of that, doing her part in marriage to protect her husband, love and treat her husband with respect, even though he's not respectable at all. All right, Kelly. Oh, sorry, Bonnie. I thought you had it, Kelly.
I was kind of like you. In 17, I kind of wondered if it was an arranged marriage, for one thing. And I thought how brave she was to act immediately, because she knew what kind of person he was. I mean, he could have beat her up or killed her when he found out. But yeah, she had the bravery to go do this because she knew it was the right thing to do. Mm. And she also knew that this man was going to be the king, and that his reputation preceded him because he had no qualms about killing evil people.
Yeah, there's so many scary things about the situation. You know, if her husband finds out, like, that's really scary. But even just going to approach God's king, right, with an army that she knows is coming to destroy, back here, John, Chloe's got one up front. She knows this is an army of men who's coming to kill Nabal's household. Like, even just having the courage to approach him and to talk to him. And of course, you see how she's wise about it, and she falls down before him, and, you know, she doesn't just walk up brazenly to David and say, let me tell you what's going to happen here, Mr. No, she's very respectful that David could kill her, you know, if he wanted to. He could say, oh, you're Nabal's wife, the guy that just insulted me? Yeah, you're the first one to die. But he didn't react that way. But she put herself in that situation. And maybe there's another good application here as well, which is tricky. I want to be very careful how I say this and how we actually apply this in our lives, because this is a kind of an odd part of the story. Wives don't have to submit to their husbands when their husbands want them to do something evil. When she finds out what Nabal did, she doesn't say, well, he's my husband and I need to submit, so I guess we all just get slaughtered by David. No. She goes behind his back, sneaks down to where David was without his knowledge to right these wrongs. And again, we need to be very careful with our application here to modern life, because just because you disagree with your husband about something doesn't mean that's evil and you don't have to submit to it, right? So you want to be very careful in defining what the actual evil is. Your husband's probably not putting you in a position where your whole household is going to be killed for his evil. But if your husband is asking you to participate in evil, you can make it clear you're not going to have anything to do with that. You're not going to do evil. Yeah, you're supposed to submit. Yeah, I'm your wife, but you're not making me do evil. I'm serving the Lord before I'm serving you. But let's say his evil actually is endangering your family, like literally and even spiritually, physically and spiritually. You can absolutely tell someone about that and get help. So I think there is some application there. But we need to be careful saying, well, Abigail snuck behind her husband's back, and so I can do the same thing. Well, okay, be careful taking that too far and make sure we stay within the confines of Scripture. Yeah, Chloe.
She believed the servant that came to her, so she wasn't just like writing them off like, oh, and then she was like, yeah, that does sound like something my husband would do. Oh, I should probably go handle this. It wasn't just like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah. And isn't it interesting? This is why Nabal's servant goes to her and not to Nabal. Because he says no one can talk to that guy. Right? If I go and I try to tell him all the good deeds David did and I lay out all these arguments and make a great case for how awesome David is and how you should help, he's not going to care. He's not going to listen to me. He's not approachable. But Abigail, she's reasonable, right? She can sit there and listen to a well-argued case for David, and then and she believes it, and she makes the right call. Yeah. All right, Larry?
Yeah, what impresses me a great deal about Abigail is that it was her faithfulness. David had said that the punishment was going to be, there wasn't going to be a male left by daylight. Mm-hmm. He was going to kill all males. She didn't know that. And so Moses stood in the breach. Phinehas stood in the breach. She stood in the breach. That was expressed, it's just a expressed her faithfulness to act, her faithfulness to the Lord, to act in such a way, because for all she knew, she was on the hit list also.
Right.
And she went. She was married to a stone, cold-hearted, drunken, covetous man that cared only about his things that he had in this life.
Sure.
And but she remained faithful as his spouse, not knowing what was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, really good. Yeah, I mean, even if he was upset, if Nabal was upset about what she did, like, she's doing him good. She this actually is for his good. Right? She's trying to save his life. And yeah, that took great faith to have the courage to go out there and do that, despite all those scary things we're talking about. I think she also showed that faith by her faith in God's promises. Like, she actually knew about God's promises to David. And it's really cool. I love what she says in verses 28 and 29. She says, please forgive, verse 28, the transgression of your maidservant, for the Lord will certainly make for my Lord an enduring house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord, and evil will not be found in you all of your days. Should anyone seek to rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, then the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living with the Lord your God, but the lives of your enemies he will sling out as from the hollow of a sling. So really cool things here. She mentions an enduring house that God was going to make for David. And what's fascinating is that's before the key passage in 2 Samuel 7, right? When God actually appears to David and says, I will build you an enduring house, an everlasting house, and an everlasting kingdom. So it's like she had the spiritual discernment and almost borderline prophecy, right? To know God's plans for David was that he would be this amazing king, an everlasting dynasty would be established by his name. And she has faith that the Lord's going to do that. You also see her intelligence here because she speaks David's language. She apparently knew about the Goliath story because she talks about the way she words it. She says, God's going to take your enemies like you took that stone. And when you took that stone and slung that stone out of that sling, that's what God's going to do to the souls of your enemies. So it's really cool how she connects that to Goliath. So she has tremendous faith in the Lord's promises and is able to encourage David by that. So maybe here's another good application. Wives, one of the great ways, husbands too, of course. I'm just saying wives because we're talking about Abigail. But wives, one of the great ways you can encourage your husbands is to keep them pointed in the direction of God's promises. You know, your husband's going to get discouraged. Your husband may, like David, you know, be a little impulsive and want to do something evil that he shouldn't. You can help be a voice of reason by pointing him back to God's promises, reminding him who God is, what God has done for them, what God's plans are for him. I think that's a really powerful thing to do as a spouse. All right, what else do you guys have for Abigail? Anybody else have anything? I think I have a couple more things, but... All right, Bonnie.
One thing Valerie had mentioned, she was smart enough to bring a lot of gifts and food for them because she knew that's really what they wanted. They didn't, you know, mm-hmm. he didn't want to come around killing everybody. They just needed a little help. Mm-hmm. And she was smart enough to also know, I better take a bunch of of food and things.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, she writes her husband's wrong by doing what her husband should have done, and is offering him support, gift. And there's wisdom. There's a proverb. I cannot remember which one it is off the top of my head or exactly how it goes, but something like a gift will pave the way before you. There's something wise when you want to soften someone's heart in giving them a gift. It's powerful. That's what Jacob does to Esau, remember? when he comes back to try to be reconciled with Esau, he's like, hey, he's going to kill me. And so he sends, you know, all these people before him, bring him gifts and all that stuff. And that can be effective. Here's something kind of basic, but I want to make more of it. She uses her influence for good. The scriptures are pretty clear that women have tremendous influence over men, especially women that men perceive as beautiful. And unfortunately, many examples in scripture are of beautiful women using their influence for evil and driving men to do bad things, like Eve tempting Adam to eat that fruit, or like Sarah talking Abraham into sleeping with Hagar, or the Midianite women, right? Like we talked about in the wilderness, basically ensnaring the Israelites in sin. Men just don't think straight when we're around beautiful women sometimes. And that means that women can have tremendous influence over us. And here, Abigail, back in verse 3, it says, yes, she was intelligent, but it also says she was beautiful in appearance. And she takes that beauty and that intelligence and she uses it as a force for good for David. She actually influences David not to do evil and tries to get him to do good instead. She influences David for good, not only for the good of protecting her husband, but also protecting David and his reputation. Because she says, look in verse 30, when the Lord does for my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and appoints you ruler over Israel, so there's her faith again. Verse 31, this will not cause grief or a troubled heart to my Lord, both by having shed blood without cause and by my Lord having avenged himself. And when the Lord deals well with my Lord, then remember your maidservant. So she's saving David from grief later on. Dwayne mentioned this in his sermon last Sunday that she's helping David have true inner peace. Right? She's saying, if you actually go through with this, then later, once you're on the throne, you're going to remember the way you acted and took vengeance on Nabal for some petty issue. David actually has some right to be angry here at Nabal. In Leviticus 19:13, it says that wages should not be withheld for services offered. And I know he wasn't an official employee of Nabal, but again, he performed this amazing service for him. Nabal should be willing to return that favor. But just five verses later, in Leviticus 19:18, it says, "You shall not take vengeance, nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself." So if David takes vengeance into his own hands here, he's going to live to regret that. And in fact, it will hurt his credibility as king. And you know who he would be acting like if he goes through with this? Saul. Because what did Saul do just three chapters earlier? In chapter 22, he slaughtered all those priests at Nob because they helped David. Ladies, you have tremendous power over men. But use that power well and for good. Use it to influence your husbands or the guys that you're dating for good. Men are also, again, kind of impulsive sometimes. And so if you see your husband or your boyfriend about to do something that they're going to regret just because they're trying to defend their pride or their honor or, you know, some other petty cause, be a voice of reason like Abigail. Keep that from happening. Use your influence to restrain them from doing evil. All right, anything else on this question? I think that was all I had. Okay. Oh, Herb's got one. Yep, almost.
Just that the way Abigail approached it, in verse 24, she fell at his feet. She took responsibility, even though it wasn't her responsibility. She said, "Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words." And she called, of course, him a worthless fellow. So her approach was, "Please hear me, but you have no reason to hear me, but please hear me." So it was asking, basically.
Yeah.
It wasn't telling him. It wasn't saying, you know, she wasn't wagging her finger. Mm-hmm. In front of David's face, saying, you know, "You shouldn't do this." Yeah. Now, there may be a time for that. I don't know. But this wasn't the time for it. So sure. She asked him nicely. She said, "Would you consider, you know, what I have to say first before you make a decision?"
Yeah, it's really good.
That's always good, especially for husbands and wives, but that's always good.
It is, in friendships. Yeah. And I do find it fascinating that, yes, she is subverting her husband here, but she's not doing that because she's a loud and boisterous woman who just wants to call the shots and run the show and I'm tired of the way my husband does things and I'm going to do better. That's not why she's doing this. She's doing this out of desperation to save her family. And she still has that gentle and quiet spirit about her that Peter talks about in 1 Peter 3 that's so attractive in women from God's perspective. So,
she's being a peacemaker.
Yeah, she's being a peacemaker. Jesus says, "Blessed are the peacemakers." She's blessed of the Lord. Yeah, really good. I really appreciate all of those thoughts. Well, what other what lessons can we get from some of the other characters here, like David or like Nabal or maybe Nabal's servant? All right, we got Mary here and Randy here. Go ahead, Randy. You'll have it first.
Yeah. In verse 14, servant comes to Abigail. He knew his boss. And he knew it was no good to go to him. And he knew her and that it would be good to go to her. So he went to her. And it brings up the point of all leaders need good information. If you're a manager and you're doing things and don't realize it, that's causing morale problems or other situations, it's going to hurt productivity. You need to know that. Mm. Or if you've got a bad apple in the bunch that you need to get rid of, or at least discipline, you need to know that. Mm-hmm. Problem is, a lot of people are afraid to go to the boss, kind of like he would be afraid to go to Nabal. And she's his wife. She's Nabal's wife, so she's, you know, he's, but he has to have the courage to do that. So she had somebody, at least one person we know of, that had the courage to go to her because he knew that Nabal was a disaster waiting to happen, and that by going to her, a disaster could be averted, or in some cases, maybe she could do some good cleanup work when Nabal did something wrong. So he is a good example of, as you said earlier, you've got to go and do the right thing. And there's a good comparison I thought of just a moment ago is she goes to David like Queen Esther went to the king with that spirit of humility, knowing, you know what, he's got a lot of power.
Right. Yeah, that's a good connection. Yeah, really good. All right, Mary and then Tim.
Well, this story sometimes has troubled me because even though Nabal seems very selfish, he's saying things that could be true. I mean, he's a very rich man, and rich people kind of, the reason they isolate themselves is because people gather where there is wealth and try to get, you know, a piece of it. So he doesn't really say anything that's not true, but in his willfulness, he didn't investigate. I mean, David gave him all these reasons why he should help him.
Yeah.
And he just said, well, you know, all these people who run away from their masters, he may have encountered people like that. So, but in his willfulness, he did not investigate and check out David's story and and see whether the appeal was genuine, and it would have been easy for him to do that.
Yeah.
And especially since his own wife knows about David and knows, you know, the situation with him being anointed king, and it would have been easy for him to know about that.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, it reminds me of, you know, people who you talk to them about Christianity and they say, oh, well, all religions say they're right, and you know, what about these people? You know, Christianity says they're not going to heaven. You know, they don't examine. They just find, like you said in that quote about from Spurgeon, about how they just apply themselves to finding reasons not to believe.
Yeah, exactly. And don't we do the same thing sometimes with hospitality, like Nabal, right? Somebody needs our help, and then what do we do? Well, they're probably just a bum, you know, just a runaway, you know, bum. Like, they don't deserve my help. And it's like, well, is that true? Have we investigated that? Or am I saying that because I don't want to let go of my money? Right? So we have to be honest with ourselves about that too. So yeah, good thought. Tim?
Okay, so the lesson from David to here would be being able to see the fact that God was in this. Verse 32, you know, he sent you to meet me. He knew it was God that should be blessed. He saw this as a close call, and that the God of Israel was the one who kept him from hurting him. He saw God in this, and we need to pay attention to that in our lives too.
Yeah. Oh man, that's such a good point here. He's willing to listen to reason and to allow himself to be restrained from evil based on someone's advice that he believes is from the Lord. And again, this puts him in direct contrast to Saul, because Saul's trying to kill David, and his own son Jonathan tries to reason with him and say, no, restrain your hand. Like, don't try to kill David. He's not against you. Even David himself, you know, he restrains his hand from killing Saul, and Saul has even more evidence that he should restrain his hand from evil. He doesn't care. He just keeps going on with his plan. He does not allow himself to be restrained. And I think that's a great question for us, that many times people will give us advice to help restrain us from evil and going through with something foolish. What do we do with that? Right? Do we listen? Do we thank God for sending this person to us, right, to stop us from evil? Or do we just write it off because we just want to do whatever we want to do? And David's a great example here. Will?
I know that in the Bible, David often shows that he has a very fluffy heart for God's name. But even now, it just proves time and time again that his desire to please God, when Abigail comes to tell him and ask him about this, it shines once again, because he very well could have let his anger get the best of him and just push past her.
Yeah. And what did you mean by fluffy heart? I just want to make sure I know what you meant
like,
by that.
Strong, like his heart, he gave it to God. He's trying to keep it soft.
Oh, rather, I see. Okay, so it's like a soft, like a sensitive heart. I got you. Yeah. Really good. Gail?
When you said what you said before about women having can have a good influence on their husbands, you also have to have a husband who's willing to listen to that wife or whoever telling them or giving them something to help them. Nabal wouldn't have listened to Abigail no matter what because he was crowding out her voice with his own ego. And yet David was smart enough to realize that what she was saying was true, and he was at least willing to listen to her and do the right thing.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, and especially in the Jewish culture, you know, sometimes the women were looked down on. You know, it could be easy for a husband to just discredit what she says just because she's a woman. But David didn't do that. She was like, man, this lady is speaking from the Lord. Like, the Lord's truth is coming from her, and I need to take that seriously. Yeah. Terry?
I was just thinking about current events and their awareness of things, both locally with the shepherds and marauders, and then being unaware of that need. I would think that Nabal, if they went to him, they probably would have been like, well, whatever, who cares, I'm a fool. But I feel like if Abigail knew of that need, she would have, you know, they had enough money to hire people and protect them. So on a local level, they kind of weren't aware of the needs of their community. So I was thinking application-wise, you know, we should be aware and be able to address needs of those in our, you know, family, our congregation, our local community, but also nationally, you know, a kingdom level. She was aware of what was going on with David and Saul, and she used that information to try to advance, you know, God and the kingdom, whereas he didn't even know who David was.
Right.
So, you know, should we be aware of what's going on at a national level or even world level and try to advance the cause of good, you know, against evil and stuff.
Yeah, really good. Yeah, that's one of the questions about Nabal is like, did he just not know about David, you know, and all those promises and stuff because he was just focused on his own stuff and, you know, his own kingdom and amassing money? Or did he know about it and he just not care, right? Either way, it's not good. Either one of those would fit the description of his character. So, yeah, make sure to be aware, be in the know of the big picture of God's plan. Yeah, Chloe?
For Nabal's servant, one of the applications I saw was, you know, he saw something and he said something. He might not have had the confidence. Obviously, he felt more comfortable with Nabal's wife, Abigail, than Nabal, but he chose to say something. He was like, oh, this needs to be said. I see this happening. And he didn't let, like, lack of confidence stop him.
Yeah.
And then David, you know, the same thing everyone's been saying is he didn't let himself see red and just continue to see red. Like, he didn't let his anger stop him. He listened to her, and he was like, oh, you have a point, right? And then on top of that, he thanked God for sending her. He wasn't just like, oh, you're awesome for coming, for, like, your heart's awesome. He was like, thank you, God, for sending her because I needed to hear that. Mm-hmm. And then Nabal, it just proves, like, you need to not just focus on yourself. You have to focus on other people, too. Yeah. The world doesn't just revolve around you.
Yeah, really good. Yeah, all really good thoughts. Appreciate that very much. What can we learn about God in this story? All right, back here, John. Sorry, or Matt. Well, okay, here up front, both of you. Sorry. All right, Mary.
Just what we mentioned in the last topic, that God speaks, he doesn't speak to us directly, and he speaks to us from his word, but he also speaks to us through fellow believers reminding us of his word and his promises. It's such a powerful thing.
It is, yeah. Doesn't God, like, continue to restrain us from evil? Like he did for David here. Yeah, he sends people to us. He gives us his word to restrain us from evil. He gives us our consciences. Sometimes he uses life circumstances to prevent us from evil and restrain that. Absolutely, when we have good and righteous hearts, God can lead us not into temptation, and he can deliver us from evil, right? Which is what Jesus prayed about in the Lord's Prayer. Yeah, Chloe?
God speaks to us, and we just have to choose to listen. So he reaches out, like you're saying, every different way. And then also, he's not going to leave us on our own. Like, he has our back. If we're looking for him to have our back, he has our back.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you see God's providence here, watching over David, protecting him. Absolutely. Well,
I don't know how to start this. Basically, when I read this story, it reminds me of the fact that God is to be feared, because something was done about this evil man. He struck him dead,
yeah.
Just like he did so many other characters in the Old Testament. So it proves that though he may be compassionate and he is the source of all good and love, he can also do some damage when he needs to.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And we should fear that.
Yeah, because it's justice, right? He's a God of justice, and he actually cares about David's suffering. Like, he saw the wrong that Nabal did to David. He cared about how his anointed king was being treated. He took that very seriously. It's just that David trusted God to deal with it instead of taking it into his own hands. And really, the word hand is used 87 times in 1 Samuel. It's used 18 times in just these three chapters, 24 to 26. And the point, especially in 24 and 26, is will David leave Saul in God's hand, or will David take Saul's life by his own hand? And now he's faced with a similar dilemma. Will he take Nabal's life by his own hand, or will he leave Nabal in the Lord's hand? And because David leaves it in God's hand, and Abigail leaves it in God's hands as well, then they're both blessed for this. If you think about it, this is ultimately how God always wants his kingdom to spread and to work. Instead of spreading his kingdom violently by the force of human hands, he wants his king and his citizens to trust the growth of his kingdom to his power and to his hands. And any time in 1 Samuel, someone takes something into their own hand, it's a disaster. But when it's left in God's hand, there's a blessing. There's a reward. And the same is true in our own lives. You know, when we try to force things with our own hand, right, on our own schedule, our own way, right, it just doesn't work very well. But when we trust and we wait on the Lord, like Dwayne talked about on Sunday, that's when the blessing comes. Last question here, and this could just be one of those too hard questions, you have to read my mind. But you see any connection or significance between this chapter and the two surrounding it? Mary, again, up front. Where David spares Saul, because it happens twice. It happens in 24 and then again in 26. David can kill Saul, but then he doesn't. So is there any connection with this chapter, Mary?
Well, I thought it was a very good question that I had never asked myself. And when you read of those two accounts, David spares Saul before this and begs him to say, look, I'm not a threat to you. And then after this, he spares him again, but he says in verse 26:10, he actually states, the Lord will deal with him. The Lord, he will be punished. He'll die in battle or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he's just seen that happen with Nabal. It's been an object lesson to him.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I don't know whether he said that anywhere else. I mm-hmm. didn't have the time really to research it, but in that verse, he actually articulates that God will take care of him in his time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, that's really good. And of course, there's a contrast as well, because Saul, he won't change his mind about killing David, and David is completely innocent. But David, he actually changes his mind about killing Nabal, and Nabal is not innocent, right? So it's showing why David is the better king than Saul, right? His character shines in places where Saul's fails, and I think that's a really good connection. I also see Abigail being like David, because David, in those two chapters, he protects the Lord's anointed, and this is what Abigail does. She protects David, the Lord's anointed. Maybe not by sparing his life, like she doesn't decide not to kill him, but she protects him by keeping him from doing something evil that would actually ruin his reputation as a king. So you see a parallel between Abigail and David there as well. I think there's always good themes, good reasons why the narrators put these chapters together, making those connections. Chloe?
I think you see, like, another thing is that David not only spares Saul and Nabal, but he makes the
decision to, like, let go of his anger towards both of them, too, in order to spare them.
Mm. Yeah, and Saul, he cannot let go of his anger at all. His anger drives his entire life. The great theme in Samuel is that God exalts the humble, and he brings down the prideful. And David so often is found humble, just like Abigail, and they're exalted and blessed for it. Hope that's helpful. Really appreciate it. The question sheets for Wednesday night are on the back table. I'll email those out as well. We'll be talking about Ahithophel and the subject of suicide on Wednesday night, Lord willing.